Good morning. This is Rob Reed, author of After On and host of the After On podcast, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for August 20th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm just waking up, Chip Hessenflow.
The best part of waking up is too much scrolling in your cup.
It could be. Or it could be that week after school starts and everybody gets that hangover from trying to get back into a normal schedule.
The first Monday? Yeah, the first Monday is certainly a thing after a four-day starter week that we had last week.
Somebody has a case of the Mondays.
We'll get it done. We'll get there. We'll get into those good habits. Ah, previews.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got a chance to see two of the new movies this week. You actually made it to the theater and saw Blinded by the Light. Tell us about that one.
Well, it wasn't about an Indian guy, Steve. It was about a Pakistani.
How dare you? Those two countries are very different countries.
Well, yes.
For the last 55 years.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is about a family that moved when he was very, very young to Britain, and he grew up there. He went to college, and somehow someone introduced him to Bruce Springsteen.
Mm-hmm.
He is a poor gentleman. It's certainly of the era of the 80s. This is a story that ultimately talks a little bit about what a teacher can do, the impact a teacher can make on a young person in a very positive way. Because this gentleman was sent to college because his dad wanted him to have a better life than he had.
Mm-hmm.
His father was a gentleman who worked on automobiles and ultimately was laid off because there was things going on in Britain during the 1980s that were disruptive to the economy. As all parents do, they want their children to have a better life. So what ends up happening? The son goes to college and determines that he wants to be a writer. And dad's like, oh, no. But he has a real gift for writing. It also talks a little bit about what your friends, how they can have an impact for you. So on his first day, he's not feeling very comfortable. He runs into some guy, and they just start talking, and he hands over a copy of Bruce Springsteen, actually two cassettes of Bruce Springsteen's albums. And he said, you should listen to these. And so if you remember back when you were a young person and music really, really, really meant something to you, finding that artist who can represent how you're feeling at the time, well, these were two kindred spirits right there. They absolutely love Bruce Springsteen. We also are exploring sort of the racism that was going on during that time and maybe still going on against, imagine being a person from another country moving to a place like England, having extreme changes in the environment. We introduced to the National Front, which is basically an English for the English type of group.
Luckily, we don't have any immigration issues now.
Well, we always have had. Whatever that new group coming in, it makes people uneasy. They're not you.
Right.
But, when you really get down to the heart of it, we're all people just trying to better our plight in life. Not at the expense of others.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Sorry.
That's a quote. We should probably write that down. I really like this. I don't think this is a great, great film.
Okay.
But ultimately, I should mention he wins a writing contest and wins a trip to New Jersey, which scares his parents to death. But I think there's something that says that's really important about this. I think that, one, the American way of looking at the world, that we bring to the world.
Mm-hmm.
We have in the United States, we have a very optimistic outlook on life. Not every country and culture embraces the can-do attitude, the American spirit. Bruce Springsteen's not talking about, he's talking about what's going on in the 1970s, late 70s in New Jersey, which wasn't very positive. But, he can see a light through that. That really resonated with this guy. So, yes, everything's bad, but, I can change things.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman who also wrote a book concerning this, he ends up meeting Bruce Springsteen. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the interview you saw?
Yeah, I saw an interview with this author, and he tells the story of how much Bruce Springsteen influenced his life, this whole story of how he got to where he is because of the influence of these ideas that flowed through this music that we see in this movie. He wrote the book about his story, and sure. He sent a copy to Bruce Springsteen. The author was at an event years later, and Bruce Springsteen came to him and said, "I loved your book." And he was flabbergasted. He has this on video. He happened to have his camera phone running, okay. And he has a picture of Bruce Springsteen's shoulder as Bruce is talking to him. And Bruce says the words, "I loved your book." And he goes, "Wow, you read it?" He says, "Yes, I read your book, and I'm proud of what I was able to accomplish long distance and make you partly the man you are." And the author goes, "Oh, I'd like to make it into a movie, I think." And Bruce Springsteen was a big part of the production of this movie, because how could you have this movie without Bruce Springsteen's music being a part of it?
Good point.
It's such a huge part of the story. So that's the influence that not only a teacher can have at telling this young man that he should be writing, but a stranger can have.
Okay, so I'm going to leave this movie with one final thought. As mom and dad were so concerned about, you know, just keep your head down and don't let people know who you are. Mm-hmm. You're not the Pakistani person you are. We want to not cause any ripples or anything. Mm-hmm. It was the teacher who said, "You should be a writer. You should you've got talent. You should explore using that." And it was a neighbor who was always looked at as the stern neighbor who basically gave him the affirmation. So like, "Look, you got published. How proud you must be." Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it allowed that young person to grow. And all I could say is leave this recognizing that ability to talk to your neighbors, to talk to young people or any person who's attempting something and giving them the support that they need. Wonderful. And also honest feedback would be very helpful.
Wonderful.
But we want to support those people. Anyway, this was a nice movie and worthy of your time. I'd say 65 out of 100.
Okay. You also got a chance to see a very different movie this week. This is Good Boys, the story of three sixth grade boys in a ridiculous situation. Let's just put it there.
This was a ridiculous situation. And this is probably a lot of the good and bad of Hollywood all at once. Mm-hmm. And I think what is bad about this is, well, we've said this a number of times, this idea of this casual drug use that's all around us, I that's not a world that I live in. And
Hollywood seems to think that it is a world that you live in.
Sure.
So there's a disconnect there between the lifestyle that maybe Seth Rogen, who is a big part of this movie, maybe his lifestyle is different from ours, and he does not see that disconnect, maybe.
I would say maybe his experiences. I learned a lot more about him after I saw Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld as he interviewed Seth Rogen. So what I would say about this film is, yes, you will laugh inappropriately. There's no doubt there are plenty of good laugh scenes. But you're dealing with sixth graders. Mm-hmm. And they're put in, you know, there's always sex toys around. Mm-hmm. There's lots of drug use. And by the way, there's one of the gentlemen, every time drug use is brought up, he immediately says, you know, we're protecting you. You should seek help. Which doesn't help the moment, because it's just said to, you know, just play to say, "Oh yeah, well, we said that," but really, what the point is, you know, it's just there. Mm. And the other part is friendship. That's the good part about it. The adventures of a group of people is part of it. But really, I get really, really back and forth on this. There are parts that the whole audience was laughing at because it's just outrageous.
Because it's outrageous. I try to explain this to my students all the time. There's a big difference between something that's funny and something that is completely outside of the norm and you're laughing at that situation. That's ridiculous. And there's some joy that you can find in, "Oh my goodness, that's not real. That couldn't happen." But that's not the same as comedy.
Yes. And the joy of this was it was about a boy trying to get a girl and they were going to kiss. And so like at a sixth grade party. And I remember when I was in sixth grade.
The innocence of youth is certainly on display here.
Wrapped in a totally inappropriate and also just not just inappropriate, just a raunchy wrapper. You're going to go back and forth on this. One part of you says, oh, this was cute and sentimental. But I think this is Seth Rogen. This is the movie that came out earlier this year with Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen, where he is a writer for Charlize Theron's character with lots of casual drug use. Mm-hmm. It just seems like, whoa, what disconnect are we running into?
Yeah.
So let's leave it at 50 out of 100.
Okay. You also got a chance to see Stacy's recommendation from last week, Mega Time Squad. This surprises the heck out of me that you found this movie. It's available streaming, a 99-cent rental on Amazon Prime, which is nice.
And iTunes. And Stacey Shaw recommended that we watch this.
Uh-huh.
And of course I did. Okay. You know, it was a recommendation.
Because you do what you're told.
And it's the Kiwis, Steve. It's about the New Zealand.
All right. Now I know why you love it. You really enjoy that New Zealand comedy style that you've seen, you know, the Flight of the Conchords.
Sure.
And that group of actors and directors went on to do What We Do in the Shadows. So this is in that vein?
Yeah, I think there's something very reminiscent of North Carolina humor and sort of a self-depreciating humor.
Interesting.
And New Zealand humor.
Huh.
So anyway, if you watch this and watch Talladega Nights, you're sort of seeing the two tail ends of that.
Interesting.
This is just me kind of spitballing this out there, because this is really an outrageous film that is funny. It's about a gentleman who creates a mob of himself by going back in time and meeting himself, and then going back in time and adding another, and all of a sudden, he's got himself a squad to try to convince a young lady, of course.
Uh-huh.
And so this is a absurd, funny movie with lots of quirky humor, running around with people who think they're much bigger than themselves, which is just lovely in many, many ways. So, hey, man. Anyway, I love New Zealand humor, and this worked out real well for me. I'll say 70 out of 100.
So you would recommend this one for a 99-cent rental over Good Boys?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
The swearing that really kind of got Stacy, it certainly is part of it, but it was just part of their casual conversation and they're older.
And it makes sense to use those words because it's just part of their lingo, mm-hmm. as opposed to in Good Boys where you're seeing these sixth graders saying these words and it's not okay. That's not how they should be communicating.
Well, and constantly mm-hmm. the protagonist trying to do something and it just turns out to be just bad. I'm trying to shoot a gun and it shoots me in the eye. I mean, it's just, what? You're going to shoot your eye out, kid. Anyway, just silly fun and a story wrapped into it. Nothing too deep, but certainly on a low budget, I shouldn't say low budget, on a reasonable budget, they mm-hmm. told a really good time story.
Nice.
So all the stuff that Steve likes.
All right. Stacy, she gave us a recommendation and I didn't follow it, so I'll have to go find this one this week.
Steve, I'm hungry. Are there anything that I could watch that you would recommend?
You know how Netflix offers you up their originals very often?
Yes.
And their originals are usually very, very good pieces of film. I caught this week The Taco Chronicles on Netflix. This is one of their originals.
This is a series.
It's a documentary about tacos.
Which I like tacos, Steve.
I don't know many people that don't like tacos.
Tacos like me.
Well, that's good. That's good. Putting on the Ritz? Good. Okay, so this is a documentary all about the different kinds of tacos all throughout Mexico. It's mainly focused in Mexico. There's one episode that takes place in Los Angeles.
Okay.
But this is 100% Spanish language
speaking the Spanish.
Yes, looking at the culture of the people and the center of that culture being food, as it often is in most cultures. Food is at its Center.
Is this a reading documentary, Steve?
It is. It is subtitled for those of you who don't speak Spanish. I speak enough Spanish, but I really got past the language of this very quickly and got into the story. This is a very well-told story documentary. The story of food. The story of these people.
Story of street food.
Yes, the story of that street food that is tacos, and that was my favorite episode, was the episode where they focused on the basket tacos. These people who wake up early in the morning and make thousands of tacos and put them into a basket and put them on the back of their bicycle and go to where the people are to feed them for the day. Wonderful storytelling, beautiful cinematography. The film, the look of this is gorgeous.
Okay.
I really, really highly recommend the Taco Chronicles.
Steve, I want something funny. Do you know anything funny, Steve?
Again, we've gone to this. Netflix is kind of the place to go for stand-up comedy right now. They are the easiest, most accessible method of finding comedians and finding those storytellers who are able to communicate something about the human condition. I got a chance to watch Whitney Cummings' Can I Touch It this week. Whitney Cummings is a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. She is very, I don't know if very popular is accurate. She is well known. Mm-hmm. She had a TV sitcom for a moment. It didn't work out very well for her, but she has some really interesting views on life, and her storytelling skill is very high level.
She's a futurist, Steve. I heard she made a robot.
That's where this one gets a little bit strange. In this stand-up comedy short storytelling situation, she explains how she went to a factory and had a sex robot made in her image. And she purchased this robot, and then she proceeds to bring the robot out onto the stage and have a conversation with this robot. It is bizarre to see the uncanny valley of this wonderful storyteller, this beautiful woman, talking to an image of herself on stage. Very, very strange moment in this stand-up comedy routine, I'll tell you that much. I enjoyed this.
Try the veal.
I look forward to watching the rest of Whitney Cummings' career, because I think she really has something special. She has that storytelling ability that I love. I love storytellers. Opening this week, there are some weird movies coming out this week, Chip.
It's late summer, Steve. They're trying to get them all in.
Is it the, hey kids, before you go to school, here, watch these really weird movies? Or are these the movies that are coming out for release for October streaming?
It could be.
Is that what this is?
Are there any movies that potentially could be like a game that we could play?
Yeah. Remember Game Night, that fun movie about playing games?
Sure.
Well, there's a movie that has nothing to do with that this week. It's about a family who makes games. They've made their money by making board games, and a young lady is getting married into this family, and they go, well, we have a family tradition that we are going to play a game at midnight. And she goes, oh, good, you're a game family. I'm going to play a game with you because I'm going to be a part of your family. They decide to play hide and seek, and their version of hide and seek involves weapons
and hunting her down
in order, they are trying to kill her, because if they don't kill her, they believe that if they don't kill her on this night, their family will have bad things happen to them. This is bizarre.
There's only two deaths in the trailer that are really, really gruesome.
Really gruesome trailer deaths.
So this one's called Ready or Not. Actually, yeah. Opens Wednesday, not Thursday. Opens Wednesday,
that's
the 21st.
That's even more bizarre. That's even more weird. There is a very unusual, very strange film called Burn coming out this week.
That sounds dark.
It turns dark. It seems innocent enough. There's this innocent young lady who works in a gas station.
She likes to burn herself, Steve.
And then we slowly understand more about her in the trailer, and then she kidnaps a guy who was trying to rob the gas station, and then she burns the gas station.
Yes, Steve, this looks like a bright film. Anyway, it's called Burn.
Yeah.
Steve, are there any more dark films for us?
Yes, there is a remake of the 1990 thriller Jacob's Ladder coming out this week. You might remember Jacob's Ladder from 1990. Tim Robbins was suffering from, well, PTSD probably after coming back from the Vietnam War. In this movie, we have a new veteran who is suffering from hallucinations and flashbacks, and we get to go through the journey with him and see through his eyes some of these bizarre things that our veterans might be experiencing.
Oh my goodness. Steve, are there any more dark films?
Yes, there are more dark films, Chip. Thanks for asking. There's one called Tone Deaf, and I still don't know why the title of this movie is Tone Deaf. There's nothing in the trailer to indicate why that's the title of this film.
So a lady is having sort of a transition in her life and decides to go away for the weekend.
Right. Stella got her groove back, you know.
Head over to a, she rents a house.
Secluded area where she can be quiet
And then the guy, we learned that he basically kills the people who stay there.
Yeah, that's Robert Patrick. You know, the bad Terminator? He's murdering people in the area.
Well, Steve, that sounds really dark. Bleak. But you know what? Let's keep going with that. How about something on, you know, in Washington, D.C.?
This might be my favorite of this list for this week. This is an action film. It's called Angel Has Fallen.
It stars the voice of God, Steve.
It stars the voice of God, Morgan Freeman, as the president, being protected by a Secret Service agent played here by Jared Butler, who is not Hawkeye from the Avengers. This is a different actor. They just look very, very similar. Jeremy Renner and Jared Butler are two different humans.
And Nick Nolte's in this, Steve. So we know this is the guy. It's got that going for it, too.
And Nick Nolte is the answer to the puzzle of how to protect the president. This seems far-fetched, but it looks full of action. I think it might actually be a good movie.
All right, so let's keep going on the dark theme, Steve. You got something for us?
On Hulu this week, there's a new movie called Jawline. This is a documentary about a 16-year-old who wants to be the star of the online community.
He wants to be famous.
That famous 16-year-old who sits in front of a camera and tells you his story and becomes famous.
And this is also about the people who help this person get. This is a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, you know, when I say bizarre, this is something that's very timely.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your young people.
My young people. I have conversations with my students all the time. I say, what do you want to do? What is your goals? Where do you want to be when you're an old person like me?
And they may say, I want to be a baseball player. I want to be a football player.
I want to be a basketball player is a very popular answer.
Sure.
And now, more and more, I hear kids respond, I want to be a YouTuber.
And the deal with this is you actually have to participate in something to be that, but this idea that I am going to go and
become a star,
open my life up or discuss my life, like you should be whoever you want to be, Steve.
Yeah.
And make that your presence. But it could
your
be
profession.
Anything. There are plenty of examples of young people who eventually they grow up in front of the camera, who have made a career of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's very unlikely.
It is just as rare as being an NBA superstar. Those aspirations are great, but if you're not on the basketball team and you're telling me you're going to be an NBA superstar, I don't know how you're going to achieve that goal.
And if your goal is to be on YouTube and just be famous, that is really not, there's not a use for that.
Right.
I mean, and I mean that in the sense that, We put together a podcast where we have a definite goal, a movie of the week and a book of the week and some reviews. You've got to put together your structure. So my point is not to discourage someone from doing it, but the idea of just being famous to be famous seems to be a very strange path.
Mm-hmm.
This could be very interesting to watch. Steve, we need something to lighten it up,
good,
to give us some
finally
faith. Tell us where we're going.
Finally, there is a movie called Overcomer. This is the story of a coach whose struggles are real in his coaching career at the school, and he finds a way to achieve those goals that we keep talking about.
All right, so this is by the group that put together the films Flywheel, Facing the Giants, Fireproof, Courageous, and War Room. Mm-hmm. This is the Christian group. If you wanted to understand about the South and how they think about Christian religion, mm-hmm. I think this is a great example.
I agree.
Flywheel was about integrity. Facing the Giants was maybe personal responsibility and how you impact people around you. Fireproof was how to be a better husband. Courageous was how to be a better father. War Room was about, I guess, the mothers and how they can protect their, basically the people around them, maybe how to be a good wife and a good mother.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is about basically discovering yourself mm-hmm. And using, you know, the Christian religion to be able to do that. Each one of these has not been overly heavy-handed or anything like that.
Surprisingly not sure. Heavy-handed.
They've been just really good examples of some ideals mm-hmm. that many families wish to live. Every one of these have spoken to me on a good level. I look forward to seeing. This is, in fact, something I would see this.
These are surprisingly good films. These are good stories from beginning to end with characters, with a good message. And yes, it is a Christian-based message, but it's not overly heavy-handed in that way. It's very human in their messaging.
So this is an idealized way you would want to have your family work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Steve, are there any other comedies out there?
Yep. There's one called Brittany Runs a Marathon. This is a true story about a young lady who wants to make a change in her life, has struggles, mm-hmm. and really wants to make a change, and she sets out to run a marathon.
And this is an example of a person who feels like life's really pressing down on them mm-hmm. and makes a change in her life, and then she recognizes by being proactive that maybe life is not bearing down. Maybe she is one of the reasons
maybe
why.
Maybe a lot of your struggles are in your head. Maybe you are part of the issue, not everybody else. And maybe you can change you and change your situation. This seems like a lovely message.
All right, which brings us to our next one, because you could always drive some people around, Steve.
This is a strange one. This is interesting. There's a movie called Give Me Liberty. And this is about a medical transport driver named Vic and his...
You get on, Steve. You may not be able to get off.
Yeah, he's running this bus full of people who need to go places, and he is trying desperately to get everybody what they need and get them where they're going. This is definitely a soccer season for a lot of parents, isn't it? The number of people who need to get to places all at the same time.
Well, this is a guy that it seems like that he's not letting them off, and they all have to start having interactions. There could be a lot of humor here. We'll see.
Might be an interesting good message in this one. I look forward to seeing Give Me Liberty.
Steve, is it time to sing?
Oh, please sing, Chip. There is a documentary called Fiddler, A Miracle of Miracles. This is the documentary of the creation of one of Broadway's best, in my opinion, musicals, Fiddler on the Roof.
Well, if I was a rich man,
deedle,
Steve.
Deedle, 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 deedle. Tradition, yes. When we put on Fiddler on the Roof at my school, tradition became a thing that we did. That was our code. That was our code amongst the people who put on that show. Years later, I could look at one of those students and just put my hands in the air and twist them, and they'd go, tradition. And it was beautiful. It's a wonderful story. I love Fiddler on the Roof, and this documentary looks like a great view of that.
Sure, it's a history of this. I was going to say, my neighbor, when I was a kid, I think I was in fifth grade or sixth grade. Anyway, gathered up all the kids in the neighborhood, and we went over to the local college where they performed this. It was an outdoor theater. And I think this was, now I may have seen musicals before, but this is the one that would you know, basically jar my memory as like my first theater experience.
Nice. I don't know what my first theater experience was, but I have a very clear memory of watching the movie version of Annie. That was my first real experience with what is a musical.
And that came out at the same time Poltergeist did. So.
Right. slightly different girl in trouble story.
Steve, you're such a nerd. Do you have something for nerds like you?
Yes, I do. There is a one-time only kind of an experience. Rush Cinema Strantiago is coming to your local theater on Wednesday.
So I just mentioned you and your love of music, Doctor Who, and all that nerd stuff.
Now, you know how much I don't really love music, but Rush is certainly one of those nerd bands. There's so many references to Rush in all of the other cultural things that I enjoy.
We say that, but I think the fans would disagree. But certainly, this is a band that is loved by a lot of people. Very deep. And I would say, for a person who grew up on Star Wars and Doctor Who and all these other things, I'm surprised, maybe in a different world, they would have introduced Rush to you and been a huge fan.
For whatever reason, Rush passed me by. I was not a big fan of Rush. I don't know their body of work as well as I should. I know Tom Sawyer. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cultural. I know the references in Ready Player One. I know the references in I Love You Man, the Jason Segel and Paul Rudd. They are big fans of Rush. Mm-hmm. And I remember the big moment in the TV show Chuck where they needed Tom Sawyer to be playing in order to play the video game the right way.
So I drive around everywhere, and streaming music services are awesome because if you can spend time like, I'm going to learn Rush, and I'm going to spend the next couple months driving around learning their body of work. That's exactly what happened to me.
I've got it on my Zune.
Do you?
On your Zune? No, I don't have it on my Zune.
Anyway, I ended up learning, spending a couple months probably going through all the albums and learning them. I understand why people enjoy this band, and I appreciate their work too.
There you go.
Book it.
Brings you to our book of the week. You have been on a journey for the last 5 years of this podcast, making yourself into the best you that you can be. And you found some really great guides for
Steve,
that journey.
One of these days I'll start putting on weight and I'll start balding. And I want to be prepared so that my self-esteem is right there.
That's right. You got a chance to read this week, The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business by Charles Dunning. And this is one of those guidebooks.
This is. And in fact, the reason I read this book, and first of all, this is something that would definitely have interested me, was because my University Alumni Association, one of the things that they were trying to do is figure out a way to connect to the alumni. And we're not always going to be able to go to a meet and greet someplace in the city. And so they sent this out and said, hey, listen, be part of a book club.
Nice.
And so
That's a good idea. We should do a book club book.
We probably should do that.
We should do that.
Well, so all the George Mason alumni were invited, and we all became part of this. And this is our first read. So actually, on Sunday was the day that we first discussed it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's Tuesday, and I had to read it to prepare for it.
Nice.
And I am so glad I read this book.
So tell us all about the power of habit. I have my own feelings on this, but tell me what this author has to say.
All right, so habits are something that you naturally have. And you can work real, real hard at changing your habits. But your poor habits that you change, they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
They're still there. In fact, as we were kind of preparing for this, you remember you read a couple of excerpts about what sparked the author of this to write this book. And it was about that gentleman who was in the military and what he was trying to do over in Baghdad, where they seemed to have riots every day at a certain time. Do you remember what they did?
Well, they went to the heart of how did this situation come about? And they pointed out the fact that these food vendors are there at this time, at this place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is the impetus to leading to this problem that they have.
So the people would all come into this area to go to these food vendors,
mm-hmm.
and the interactions would ultimately create some kind of chaos that was going on at this time, and it was dangerous.
So?
And so what he said is we need to break the habit. And this is a gentleman who had spent a lot of time from his early life thinking about habits, and became an expert of this and used it in a military situation. So he had to break that habit. The vendors were not allowed to be there anymore, and so they didn't have this type of interaction.
And that eliminates that impetus to make something happen. And we can do that in our daily lives. We can change that one thing that leads to those habits.
Well, the author learned about this and started his journey to actually get to the heart of habits, how we think about things, how the brain processes it, and how we potentially could bypass it to create what we would like to say better habits. Mm-hmm. And so we learned one of the studies in here was on Alcoholics Anonymous, because what do we know about alcoholics? Many times they have a very difficult time letting go of alcohol. Mm-hmm. And there are 12 steps, and we learned some stories about the gentleman who did this. And he was a gentleman who wanted to stop drinking, so he wrote down these 12 steps, and he's created basically what became a fraternity of people who are alcoholics and how to not be an alcoholic. Well, we've got plenty of psychologists and sociologists studying how to help people not be alcoholics. Mm-hmm. But why does this work? The deal was is that it really doesn't have science behind it.
Right.
And so this was part of the study of this book on how the habits. I'm not an alcoholic, but I can see how weight has an issue with me. And I found that when I used the app MapMyRun and I was able to log in my food, mm-hmm. I was more conscious of the calories I was using.
And that's what it comes down to, is if you want to change something, being conscious of your actions mm-hmm. can change the way you look at it and change your activities.
And you also find that by logging in your food, you also could be working on your other habits, like, oh, I should do some exercise mm-hmm. or something of that nature. And sure. When you do exercise, your body will start craving to be better. That doesn't mean that the self that was there before is gone. The self that was there is still there. Mm-hmm. One of the other studies that we have is on Tony Dungy. And Tony Dungy is a professional football coach. He had interviewed for a lot of different head coaching jobs and was always passed over. But the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were really, really bad at one time. In fact, historically bad. They had not made the playoffs or made it to a Super Bowl before he got there. And he was brought in, and his statement on or philosophy on being a coach was he was going to work with players on the habits they had, where they are in the field, the habits they kept. He goes, you trained your whole life to be a football player. I'm going to work on your habits on how to address this. And it took a little bit of time, but they finally bought in. The players bought in, and they started winning. Well, when they started winning, then they started going to the playoffs, and they started success in playoffs. But when they got to the championship game before the Super Bowl, which is the real championship game, the team was falling apart. Hmm. And so he had to go back and reassess what was going on. What was the difference that we could really do well in the regular season and do well in the playoffs until we got through the championship game and we kind of fell apart? And what they determined was happening is Steve, when he got to the championship game, felt he needed to do something more than what the habit was that got him there. So he was kind of second guessing himself. He was overcompensating for something. And that type of mental breakdown was the difference between the team potentially winning and going to the Super Bowl and, just not being competitive at all. And so, first of all, to determine that was the case, it seems pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty brilliant. Those habits, those things that you train for, the habits that you use every day. I mm-hmm. wake up, I go and shower, I get dressed, I go to work. I go to work at a certain time, I get there at a certain time, I go a certain path to get there. All of those habits, if they are driving you toward your goal, they're great habits. Do that the same way. But those habits that you feel are not driving you toward that goal, you should be conscious of those.
And I don't want us to understand that this is all about your psychology in this. This is also studies of brand management on dealing with habits. So we also get a study of Febreze when it first came out, and the wife of the inventor of Febreze the gentleman was a smoker. So he came home and his wife noticed that he didn't smell anymore. What was going on? They had created this formula that basically took away smell. Mm-hmm. It took away the smell molecules and
covered them with the molecules of the Febreze in such a way that it didn't smell anymore.
It went away.
Magic.
All right. So they did a lot of test studies on this. And one of the ladies worked for the Park Service, U.S. Park Service. And she was around skunks quite a bit, and she smelled. And her house smelled because of, you know, you bring whatever you bring home. And when she started using Febreze, what she found is that she wanted to get married and all the stuff that you have in that time in life. And well, anyway, she could never really get second and third dates because everything was pretty cool until they got home and all of a sudden it was like, whoa, this is, I can't handle this.
I cannot handle the situation with the skunk smell.
So they spray down the house with this Febreze and she goes, this is a real big life changer. So it was like, wow, this is going to change people's lives. Of course they're going to want to do this. But when they started bringing it to market, they found out people were not buying it. And why were they not buying it? Well, because even if you got a bottle of it and you took it home, you were so used to the smells around your house, you didn't notice the smells that were there.
The term that they use in the commercials is nose blind. You don't smell those things anymore because you're just used to it. It's just habit.
So you bought your can, you sprayed it, and then you put it in the cupboard and you didn't really use it again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the product was dying. It was a failure.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a little bit about what the pressure they had on them. So what did they do and how did they use the message of this book? Well, the message of this book was to change behavior. And the way they did it was you would clean your house and then you would take your bottle of Febreze out and then you would spray it.
And that became the habit.
The habit was to spray it after you cleaned your home. And that's how you knew your home was clean. So you're associating your clean home and it being finished, as far as the cleaning you did, with the spraying Febreze.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they placed the product and marketed the product. This is an entire book that you will feel that, you know, how to hack into your brain, how your habits are still there, how you can improve your habits. This is a beautiful book. I'm so glad that it was suggested to us that we read this
clubs.
Book.
Aren't book clubs awesome? We get so many great suggestions. We have so many experts that know that there's a great story out there that we should read. And we find out and when we experience it, we can get so much out of a book like this.
It reminds me of the Admiral that wrote the book a while ago, Make Your Bed, first thing in the morning. Why do you make your bed? Well, you make your bed because you have accomplished your first task of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And even if everything else in the day fails, you come home and your first task is complete.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why you make your bed.
Yeah.
Because it's always an affirmation that you have control over your life on some level.
Right.
And there you go.
That's it. This one is called The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business by Charles Duhigg. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it.
Steve, what can we do this week?
Oh, Chip, one of your idols. We got a chance to have a conversation with Neil Adams at the Wisconsin Comic Convention.
Now, we still have more interviews, and Neil was a wonderful interview.
Uh-huh.
In fact, we talked a lot about Batman. We talked a lot about the creation he did, and sort of his thoughts on what's the difference between, say, a modern Batman and maybe the animation Batman that many people grew up with,
mm-hmm.
and then the Batman that he helped define from the 1970s.
And we got a chance to talk about design. One of your passions, design and drawing. This is a great interview.
I do a grasshopper.
That's right. I was probably kindergarten, first, second, third grade. We were all had a lady who was watching, so there's about nine of us kids. They had a 60-year-old son who had all your comics. We basically spent 4 years drawing. He was a commercial artist, by the way, the father was. And anyway, it took me all the way to college. I ended up starting school as a commercial art major. I ended up changing, but it was pretty, your work inspired me in an incredible
exhausting, person. Isn't it?
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Really?
But you do wonderful work.
So, Chip,
has these great memories of your work, and your work inspired...
Oh, you mean my father, Neil Adams.
We are with legendary artist Neil Adams. And Neil Adams, in many ways, is the Batman that we remember from my youth.
That's
and probably all the way up until maybe the animated series, where a new generation got to
maybe all the way up to Frank Miller.
Absolutely.
All the way up to Jim Lee.
Absolutely.
All the way up to overcoming Jim Lee and Frank Miller and still being there. Because really, what's his name, Capullo and the various guys are doing my Batman. Or what I would call Jerry Robinson's Batman, which is more or less the original Batman, the really good Batman. Jerry Robinson. Bob Kane, who created Batman, not so much. Jerry Robinson, who came along later, who created Robin and the Joker, a little bit more adventurous and good at what he did. I think of that as like the better Batman. So that's sort of my Batman, only with better anatomy and a more realistic background. So other people come in and stylize him, but I mean, if you were to say Frank Miller's Batman, you'd have to say, well, Frank Miller's like an 80-year-old Batman, which
sure.
is not exactly Batman. Then you'd have Jim Lee's Batman, which I don't mean to criticize, but he's a little bulky. And even while he's doing that rather bulky Batman, Capullo's doing a slimmer, trimmer Batman, a little bit more like mine. So I think mine is the more lasting of the Batman because he's the way you would... be Batman if you were Batman.
And let's talk a little bit about that, because we had just, I was a kid, I was watching the Batman television, we had Adam
which
West.
Which was great, but it was a satire, it was a comedy.
Sure.
I mean, we're not fooling ourselves, we're not watching a realistic Batman TV show, we were watching a satirical comedy, and that was based on comic book superheroes, which everybody made fun of in those days.
Sure.
Not so much today.
Well, you moved the character from this Adam West type of character back to the night. And tell us a little bit about what the process was.
I think the process was that I don't think that DC understood exactly what was going on with their own character, because they had licensed the character for the television show and they made a bunch of money. And then the television show was winding down, but the comic book character that they were doing in the comic book was a little bit like the television show Batman. Not that he was funny, but he was a little cartoony. His cape didn't flow like a cape, and he wasn't the greatest detective in the world, and he didn't walk around in the daytime for kids to point at him and tell their daddies that he's a man walking around in his long johns, which is a little embarrassing. Maybe at night that works, but sort of in the daytime, you know.
Right.
Walking down the street, having an ice cream cone doesn't work with a underwear.
Buttermilk, sure.
So I tried to convince my editor that I'd like to do Batman, and if they just let me do it, I'd just play with him and bring him back to what he was. My editor, you know, pretty much kicked me out of his office and told me they were thinking of canceling Detective Comics. And the ratings on and the sales on Batman weren't very good either. So I went down and I did Brave and Bold for Murray Boltonoff, another editor. And that teamed up Batman with Aquaman and Deadman and all these other characters each issue. And after a while, that was really the only Batman at DC Comics that kids read, was Brave and Bold. So that pissed off my editor on Batman. And he confronted me and said, you know, why do I think I know what Batman should be? And I said, well, I don't think it's just me, Julie. I think it's me and every kid in America pretty much knows what Batman should be. The only people that don't seem to know what Batman should be are people here at DC Comics. So he decided I was going to work for him. And so I started doing stories in Batman and Detective Comics. But he also brought in the extra added attraction of Denny O'Neill, who was a Nightbeat reporter early in his career and dealt with more realistic situations than you might have in a comic book. So he added more realism to the character. And I think that turned the corner even more toward a more realistic Batman. We did eventually have to go back to the clowns, go back to Joker and those characters, but I think we did pretty well for a little while, and then when we went to the clowns, we even made them a little bit more realistic and a little bit more deadly. And that brought Batman back to where he is today. I mean, I think pretty much that's the Batman we see today. More realistic, more anatomically correct, cape flowing, and a super detective, a super Batman. I think they keep on messing it up in the movies, but I'm not responsible for that, so that means nothing to me.
Are you bothered by how realistic some of the stories have gotten, where we're seeing these angsty characters? The movies, certainly.
I don't honestly think that the stories are getting more realistic. I think if you have characters that are destroying cities, that are doing the things that they're doing in comic books, they're being approached by Donald Trumpian type of disasters that we fear and abhor, and then getting even worse. I mean, they'll destroy cities. I don't think that's a Batman story. I think Batman, you know, fights criminals and he takes care of bad guys and stuff. But if you're up to the point where you're half of your city is being destroyed, haven't you failed, really, as a hero? I mean, it seems to me that these guys are blowing it left and right, and you know, populations of cities are being destroyed, and you know, people are being destroyed, and continents are being sunk, and it's just everybody's trying to top everyone else, and it's becoming so unrealistic that you can't say it's realistic anymore. You can say it's fantasy.
Right, so I have a question for you. Disney ended up buying Marvel, and one of the strategies they have with their books is trying to lower the reader's age, in my opinion.
To target a younger audience. I don't know. I think they're trying to do that with some of their books.
Sure.
But I don't think they're doing it in general.
Okay.
I mean, I think there's the more adult books, and then there's the more kid books. I think, you know, we've tried to do this in comics for quite a while, to split off the characters and say, okay, there can be a more kid-oriented Batman and Superman and that. And then there can be a more realistic Superman and Batman in that. We've done it also with the cartoon shows. I mean, the cartoon shows, you know, people don't like the DC Comics movies, but they love the DC Comics cartoon shows and cartoon movies in some ways, because their stories are much, much more easy to relate to than the movies that try to go overboard. And you got people coming from other dimensions and all kinds of weird stuff. I think that they're overplaying their hand, and they're getting just a little too fantasy oriented. I don't live in that universe. I can't even relate to it. You know, you got superheroes around every corner, and they're blowing things up, and they got rays coming out of their eyes, and it's just too crazy. How can you look forward to a tomorrow where the things you blow up are even greater? You know, pretty soon the Statue of Liberty is going to be, you know, destroyed by every superhero in comics. I don't think that's more realistic. I think that's more fantasy. And I think that the part of the problem is fans are like acting kind of schmucky, and instead of demanding more realistic stories that you can relate to, they're going, yeah, blow something else up. You know, it's like whatever fantasy movie you're going to as an American, no offense to Americans, which I am one of, everybody knows when the end of the movie is coming, when the island blows up. You blow the island up, and or the whole building comes down, and oh, that must be now the end of the movie, because we've just destroyed everything. That's dumb fiction. That's dumb. That's bad writing. Really bad, dumb writing. I don't like it.
In fact, let's ask if our listeners would like to find out more about where they can buy Neil Adams stuff, and where they can learn more about your work that you're currently working on, where would they find you?
NeilAdams.com. Pretty much.
Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
Thank you for all of your work. It's
a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to meet you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Man, that was wonderful.
This week, we've got some we've got some choices. We've got some choices. We can go and do some fun things. We're going to go watch a baseball game on Saturday. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a lot of fun.
That is going to be a great time.
So we look forward to that. And then on Sunday, our friends from Down in Front are going to be a part of a big comedy festival. The Otherworld Theater is hosting its inaugural genre-thon. That's really hard to say. Genre-thon comedy festival this weekend. It's running from Friday through Sunday, the 23rd through the 25th.
Steve, tell us what types of things are going to go on.
Improvised Star Trek is going to be there. If you've ever watched an episode of Star Trek and thought about, you know, I could do that. Watching a comedy troupe putting on Star Trek in an improvised situation is really fun.
Lots of red shirts there, Steve.
Not as many as there were last time. Sorry. Sorry. We're mourning for those losses. It's very sad.
It's sad, Steve.
It's very sad.
They didn't even have nice names.
Those... name is Guy.
What's my last name? And that is from Galaxy Quest, of course.
Of course. The one of the better Star Treks. Oh. That's not Star Trek. Improvised Jane Austen is doing the same thing with Jane Austen. That's very entertaining.
Do you remember the Jane Austen Fight Club?
Jane Austen Fight Club.
Oh, that was great.
There you go.
There was a certain there were certain rules, Steve.
Yes.
Yes.
And Geekspear Theater is going to be performing The Tragedy of Johnny and Lisa. This is a Shakespearean parody of The Room.
All right, so we've got to say it. Say it, Steve. Say the great line.
Thou art tearing me apart, Lisa.
And brilliant. So this was performed at one time.
At the Blue Box, yes.
That's right.
Yes.
And so this is going to be performed again.
So if you didn't get a chance to see this, however many months ago that was, at the Blue Box, yes, I recorded it on YouTube. You can find that piece of it on YouTube, but there's so much more to it. You should find time to get to the Otherworld Theater this weekend for the Genre-thon comedy festival.
A huge build-up to what finally the actor has to say the line.
Right. Chicago's premier riffing troupe Down in Front will be there on Sunday. They are riffing their Saturday morning cartoons, taking some of those old cartoons that we grew up with and really questioning whether they should be entertainment or not.
Well, you remember from the 70s, yes. There were no bad guys, Steve. There were just a lot of misunderstood people.
Yes, they
no,
do.
No bad guys.
They have their Justice League episode. That is a part of what they're going to be riffing. Yes,
well,
sir.
Well, think of Scooby-Doo. Everyone is like, well, it's Mr. Johnson. Yeah. Those meddling kids.
Those meddling kids. Also on Monday, Down in Front is taking over the Revolution Brewing Tap Room.
Well, you know there's going to be good beer there then, Steve.
I enjoy my Revolution Brewing beer, that's for sure. It's the nerd beer. The Anti-Hero is the official beer of C2E2. So yes, I drink a bit of that. They're going to be improv riffing their B-minus presentation. This is the one that they did last year with Jonah Ray. And Jonah Ray, who is the host of Mystery Science Theater 3000, so he knows riffing, he was so floored by the comedy that Down in Front was putting out that he had to stop and become an audience member. He was admiring their work so much.
Well, that says a lot about the talent that's there, mm-hmm. and also about how, you know, how wonderful the artists we have in the Chicago area are.
Oh,
we can change the world, Steve.
There's so much talent, and we are changing the world. We are showing the world the improv talent from Chicago around the world, because that is, you know, the Saturday Night Lives are a lot of those improv actors who go on to all of those presentations. I look forward to seeing Down in Front and Michael Albright and all of his friends doing some great shows this weekend. Make sure that you go to Down in Front Live for all the details of where they're going to be this weekend and you know, in weeks to come. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think so. Let's go watch some baseball.
That's right. Baseball.
It's going to be fun. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Stitcher and TuneIn and Spotify. And you can ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenblum.
We'll see you in the future.